Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases to be argued on our 1:30 docket today, and then we have four other cases that will be submitted on briefs. I understand that counsel have indicated to the clerk the amount of time that they wish to argue, so we will call the first case, Fort Worth PRs Inc. versus Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission.
May it please the court, Mr. John Gamboa to argue for appellant and Mr. Nicholas Kennedy to argue for appellee.
Thank you. Mr. Gamboa.
May we begin?
Yes, sir.
This is a lawsuit that started in administrative hearings on a TABC conflict. But unlike the other articles that we have brought, and I see the judge shaking his head because he's heard enough of them from me, this is not a place and manner, which you have a new experience now. Normally on these type of situations with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, they go against place and manner, which is where is your place located and the manner in which you run it. And that's, is it against morals, is it against health, et cetera. That's not the case here. This particular case was brought under Section 106, which is negligent commission, and that means a sale to a minor. I notice in the reply brief, the Attorney General's office spends a lot of time talking about the substantial evidence rule and everything of that nature. I will tell you that that's not the issue. And I will concede and did in my brief that there was a sale of an alcoholic beverage, and it was on a sting by the police department. The question that I've got and I have raised here, and I haven't found any law on it in point, but we need some. If the TABC has the right to establish under which section of their code they are going to try to cancel or suspend, then they are bound by the dictates of that section or that code. In this particular case, they go under Section 106.13. It's a criminal offense if you sell to a minor. The issue is the safe harbor defense. And I presented that to the trial judge. And anecdotal to that, the safe harbor defense was created about 22 years ago in a case called McGinnis versus Wrangler Club. I was the trial lawyer on that. The appellate lawyer that joined me was Judge Evans. And we were the ones who started the term, the safe harbor. What the safe harbor says is, and that's under Section 106.14, right next to 113, that they're coming after us. They came after us on 113, but 106 gives you a way out. But you have to meet three requirements to do that. Number one is, if you make it a condition of employment, then you've met the criteria for number one. Number two is if your employees, now that is the providers, that's not the barbacks, that's not the delivery boys, your employees are certified. That's number three. Number four, and in all the lawsuits that I've had on dram shop, and this is a dram shop defense, and I think that's where the judge, we need to differentiate what we're talking here. A dram shop defense is sale of alcohol to an intoxicated person or someone you should have, and they hurt someone. This is a defense that you can use in that. But when you use it in a regular trial, it is like any other defense. You have to have it in writing. It's an affirmative defense. If you don't plead it, you don't get it. It's like comparative responsibility. On dram shops, we do that. We do comparative responsibility and 106. It has to do that. The judge in the 48th determined that you didn't file your affirmative defense, which I tried to explain to him, you do that in a dram shop. But in this type of hearing, it's not a de novo in district court. You don't start the dram shop. You don't start the defense. You're at the very end of the trail that you've started. If you look at the law, and we are just addressing the issues of the Office for Administrative Hearings, we're addressing the issue of the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Code. There is nothing in those issues, and my brief addresses that, that requires written pleadings. The only thing that you must do when this...
Even if you're correct, how do you get around the finding of fact number 11 that there was no evidence produced that either of respondents' bartenders that were on duty had attended a TABC-sanctioned seller-server training course?
I addressed that in my brief where Gilmore, which was the head of the club, testified that he required it and they were. What that came up was that two of the officers testified that Mr. Gilmore told them he didn't know if they were or were not. In his testimony, and I've got it in my brief, he addressed that issue and said, no, I didn't say that to them. I have meetings with them.
Doesn't that just then create an issue of fact for the trial court to resolve if a certificate wasn't actually introduced into evidence?
There's not a requirement that we introduce a certificate into evidence in the administrative hearing because that's all testimonial. And that's what we did is we hit all three of those notches with testimony. It's important to note that if we were in a regular trial, Your Honor, and we were doing pleadings, then we would be addressing Rule 66 or Rule 67. We don't have those. So as we put on evidence, it's incumbent upon the opponent to object if they're going to object. Otherwise, it's in.
Well, somebody had the burden of proof, right?
Somebody has a burden of proof, yes. And
so if you had the burden of proof on the safe harbor defense and they introduced evidence or testimony that there was no, it was not recorded in their computer, that the bartender had attended a TABC-sanctioned seller-server training course, then isn't that conflicting evidence? They're saying they have no evidence of it. Mr. Gilmore is saying that they were. Doesn't the trial court have to resolve that?
If the trial court had addressed the issue of that, yes, he would have. But if you will look at the transcript of the trial court, the trial court said, Mr. Gamboa, you didn't file written affirmative pleadings on this case. So I spent most of the time arguing that written affirmative pleadings were not at issue here. So it wasn't addressed if it was conflicting or which side said what. It was on the issue of law is we didn't have written pleadings. We've also attached, Your Honor, with this, what pleadings are put into an administrative hearing, and it's just a pretrial statement. They want to know how many hours you're going to take, who's your witness going to be, and have you issued your exhibits. What we're asking this court to do is to reverse the decision and remand because that issue, what you just brought up, needs to be addressed. And that is one of the things that can be happened. Three things can happen, as you well know. Affirm, reverse, and reverse and remand with instructions to develop. We've had, I think the last one was out of Judge Sutter's court, where she sent us back for some more testimony, and then she brought it back. And that's what we're asking this court to do. We never got to that issue because it all fell, as you'll see in our brief, on did we file a written affirmative defense or not. Now, if I may take that one step further. I've noticed in the reply brief that that wasn't brought up by us when the findings of fact and conclusions of law and that was being done in the proposal of decision. The proposal of decision, as you well know, is drafted by the administrative law judge. If you're going to attack the proposal, You do it by a motion for rehearing. Also, a motion for rehearing is jurisdictional. You have a certain amount of time to file it. If you don't file it, you cannot go to district court. At that time is when we address the issue of the findings of fact and conclusions of law regarding the safe harbor defense, that we did not see anything in the record where there was any objection to it. There was nothing in the record that said we couldn't go forward with it. There was nothing in the record saying otherwise. But the district court said you need to have it in writing. And our issue is, no, it doesn't have to be in writing. It can be tried by consent. It can be tried like Rule 66 and Rule 67. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you. We'll hear from you again on rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Again, my name is Nick Canada. I'm an assistant attorney general. I'm here today on behalf of the TABC in this substantial evidence review of an administrative order. I disagree with much of PR counsel's argument because it mischaracterizes the nature of the proceedings before the court. The last point is that in oral comments from the bench, the district court said he isn't considering the matter because you need to have it in writing. I have no recollection of that, to be honest, and I didn't read the transcript of what happens at the hearings because I never do, because this is a substantial evidence review, and this court is exercising the very same authority that the district court ordered. And so we appear to have a mischaracterization here of what we're doing here today. We're not here asking, did the district court get it right? We're asking whether there is substantial evidence in support of the administrative order. And it was de novo. It's a de novo review under the substantial evidence at the district court because it's a review as a matter of law. And thus, today, this court is essentially redoing the same process. This court, respectfully, is not asking, did the district court err? This court is not grading the paper of a district court as it usually does. This court instead is asking, did the administrative order issued by the TABC finding that there was a violation of a sale to minors with criminal negligence, is it supported by substantial evidence? Now, counsel has conceded. This is exactly the point. First, in order to get to the affirmative defense, this court would have to find that finding of fact number 11 is not supported by substantial evidence. And then, because finding of fact number 11 negates one of the three elements of the defense. So the first thing, the argument would have to be on judicial review is that finding of fact number 11 is not supported by substantial evidence. And we've pointed out in our brief that it is. But let's assume for the sake of analysis that somehow the court finds and disagrees with me, which has happened, and says, all right, we need to determine, that's where you would follow, you would have to determine what? The findings of fact, the safe harbor defense is a three-pronged fact decision. And so essentially, and this is why it doesn't work, you would have to be finding that the TABC, through a SOA judge, erred as a matter of law in not finding three findings of fact that were never proposed to the administrative law judge in the first instance. And so it simply doesn't work. If it had been raised as an affirmative defense, either through written pleadings, which I submit to you is the proper way to do it, and I do not understand fully why it wasn't done that way, or alternatively, You could say the argument must be, well, we tried it by consent because we put in evidence relevant to it. But you still can't get the judge to the next place. You have, at the administrative level, you have to give the agency the opportunity to make the findings of fact that you believe the agency should make. And then when you put those findings of fact in front of the agency, if the agency had failed to do that, then under the substantial evidence procedure, Your Honor, you could stand up here and say, Your Honor, we tendered the three necessary elements of the affirmative defense. And we demonstrated on the record that all three of them are supported by substantial evidence. So therefore, please reverse, because the failure to enter the affirmative defense is marked by error of law because there was a factual record for the defense. But we do not have the predicate submission of the defense to the SOA judge. SOA judge never had an opportunity and was never requested to make the findings of fact. So respectfully, this court cannot do what the appellant is asking it to do. This court cannot make new findings of fact. This court cannot criticize the administrative law judge for failing to make findings of fact that were never asked or were never presented. And that's candidly why this just simply doesn't work, and why it is so important that this is a substantial evidence review of an administrative order. Because it's not sufficient that Mr. Gilmore contradicted the testimony of the two officers involved. Because, as Justice Walker pointed out, then that leaves a credibility issue, and that's the province of the administrative law judge. The only way the court could overturn finding of fact number 11 would be for the court to substitute its balance and weighing of the testimony for that administrative law judge, and under the appropriate standard review, that wouldn't be a proper exercise of the court's power. So again, you can't get there, but if you do get there, you can't fashion the relief, because again, there was no way, having not asserted the defense, having not put the claim in front of the administrative body at the SOA level, the agency never ruled on it. And so you're being asked to find as a matter of law that the failure to enter certain findings of facts was error. Well, how can that be if they were never tendered?
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, sir, and may I respond?
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit more than I want you
to. Yes, sir.
Would the substantial evidence rule apply even in the circumstance of no written pleadings if there had been no finding 11?
Okay. I think I have that, Your Honor, but please, if I get off track. The first point, the first point is a suggestion that there was trial by consent. That's essentially the argument. There's two responses to that. The first is that there is nothing uniquely relevant about Mr. Gilmore's testimony that would, in fact, clearly and unequivocally signal that an affirmative defense is being raised. Again, this is critical. There is nothing uniquely relevant. because, as highlighted, as mentioned in the brief but not fully set forth, there is suggestion that the penalty assessed was unreasonably harsh. Well, all of that testimony would be relevant or could be considered by the judge in the context of an appropriate penalty. So the first response, Your Honor, is it's not a signal. Mr. Gamboa, who I have the greatest respect for, he and I have done this more than once, we disagree on this point, but I believe I'm right on this point. It is not a signal. So the testimony does not submit the issue. And the concept of testimony submitting the issue is not how we advance trial by consent issues. The case I cited in my brief really said it well, that when you're looking for trial by consent, you don't review the record and look for relevant testimony. What you look for is for a relevant demand. That exact phrase in the case I cited, I thought really hit the nail on the head, is you're not looking for evidence of the issue, but for evidence of trial of the issue. And I grant you there is evidence of the issue, but there's no evidence of trial of the issue because it was never submitted. There had to have been a submission. Now, the case I cited in a footnote, the Jungle Inc. case, raises the question, could PRs in this case have filed an answer? Certainly they could have. Could they have moved for relief there at the hearing? All of these issues could have then been addressed on what is a proper procedure, but that didn't happen in this case. So then the last point is, well, then could we decide from the record if there was substantial evidence? This court respectfully plays a very limited role in these cases, and it's not appropriate. It would not be appropriate for this court to find new findings of fact. It would not be appropriate under the standard review for this court to go through the evidence, the testimony, and say, on balance, if I had been the hearing officer, I would have found the three additional findings of fact that are the requisite basis for the defense. So therefore, I'm going to find legal error for not applying the defense. Respectfully, this court cannot get to the substantial evidence analysis of matters that were not submitted before. You don't have that power in these types of cases. This is not the way it's set up. And it just doesn't work to argue it to the district court, because again, you're not here on appeal of a district court error. It's really a flow through. This court today is exercising the very same power that the district court did. And respectfully, the only thing the district court's order is that the administrative order is affirmed. And I respectfully ask for the very same relief from this court.
Let me ask you a question. Going back to Judge Walker's question about how do you get around number 11, how do we view number 11 because it is incorrect on its face? It says no evidence was produced, a little typo there, that they had had the training. Well, that's wrong. There was evidence. There was apparently conflicting evidence. We had the he said, she said from the police officers, but we had Mr. Gilmore's direct testimony that they had taken the course. So how do we deal with that, or do we deal with it? What do we do with that?
Well, I think the key is in the words, Your Honor.
Okay.
There's no evidence to confirm. In other words, I think what the SOA judge is doing there, and again, we're kind of slipping into her thought process, is to acknowledging there was conflicting testimony, but there was no evidence to confirm it one way or the other. So, number one, since it's an affirmative defense, this failure falls on the shoulders of PR and not TABC. And it's probably also a reference, but again, it's speculation at this point, of her consideration of the testimony from the investigating officers who said, we went on the computer and we don't, you know, there's no card. So there is no evidence to confirm it. Does not mean that she didn't consider the fact that there was conflicting testimony.
Okay.
That's how I read it.
All right.
I think the key word is produced to confirm, but it's also a statement of why are we doing this when it is so easy to confirm, which is bring in the card. So I think that's what it, I think it's a statement of frustration by the hearing officer, if nothing else. I think it's a recognition by her that it is a disputed point of fact that should have been easily clarified. Either she had a card or not. Nobody brought the card. One witness said she had it. The other witness says, I got a computer and she doesn't have it. I appreciate the court's time this afternoon. The last point I would like to make is principally that on motion for rehearing, I emphasize this in my brief, but it bears mention here, the entire system is set up so that the agency cannot go behind SOA and change findings of fact and make new findings of fact. Respectfully, on the motion for rehearing and again on appeal, the overseeing body is being asked to do something they simply cannot do, and the judgment below should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal, Mr. Gambo?
Do I still have some time left on that 10 minutes, or have I used it up?
You get 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I will be very brief. We're down to the issue of the white elephant in the room that we're all skating around. That means that, well, in regular cases, if you're going to hold someone in contempt of court, the law says you got to give them the key to get out. In this particular case, they're holding us accountable under 106.13. 106.13 says if you do this, you've got trouble. But 106.14 is the key to get out of jail. Now, to say that we need to have written pleadings on that, written pleadings, as I understand, is so that you don't surprise your opponent. Opponent has the right to know what they're going to address. How can you surprise the TABC when they're coming after you under 106.13? And 106.14 gives you the key to get out. So my issue is, testimony was there. Yes, it was conflicting. If we're going to say we believe the police officers over the club owner, police officers are human beings. Appreciate them. They put on their trousers one leg at a time the way we do. Rest of us. But you'll notice that there's no testimony there other than the police officer's own testimony. There wasn't a computer printout. There wasn't anything at all. So why would you give his testimony greater weight than the individual whose job it was to have the meetings every night, to check, to make sure that everything was running accordingly? He even said that I couldn't decide which one of these ladies violated 106.13, so I fired both of them. If that's not meeting the criteria of number 3, I don't know what is. And I will tell you, that's the one that we have the trouble with in jury trials. We always get a note from a jury, not always, but the majority of the time. What does number 3 mean? You don't directly or indirectly encourage. Judges normally say, read the charge. We don't want to go back to the state and correct that problem because then we'll have Mothers Against Drunk Driving getting away and getting rid of the safe harbor defense. So it's one of those that you just keep plogging on. So all I'm saying is they haven't addressed the issue of the affirmative defense. And it doesn't have to be in writing. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gamboa, Mr. Kennedy, thank you for your arguments here today. They've been helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business. We'll give counsel in the other case a chance to come forward and prepare for their argument.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, it was always a pleasure.
Okay.